Let's go, fuckers.
Come on, me.
I'm going out tonight. I'm feeling
just okay.
I'm fine.
I'm gonna let it all hang out.
Pussy lips.
Pussy lips. Boom, boom, boom. Gotta get that.
Boom, boom, boom.
Gotta get that.
Boom, boom, boom.
Gotta get that.
Boom, boom, boom.
Lips.
Boom, boom, boom. Lips.
Lips.
Hi, welcome to Trans in Love,
a podcast
where we talk about being trans
and in love.
And I'm Ezra Michelle.
And I am El Duran.
And we're married.
And we're in love too.
And we're transgenders.
And we're. Wait, you're trans?
You knew you that, guys. You silly girl.
You guys.
You're funny about that.
What? Oh my gosh, can I tell you something that really bothered me the other day?
Sure.
Good way to start a podcast. It's just ticked my gears.
You know what tickles my fancy?
You know what tits my licks?
What happened?
I was watching this video of Andy Cohen interviewing the Kardashians at the end of their show on E! Like, their show continued on a different network. And they were talking about Caitlyn Jenner.
Sure.
And, like, how, like, that must have been so hard for all of them. No one died here.
Also, just go away into a cave and do that on your own.
Yeah.
With I don't want to see it. Yeah. That's what I mean by cave.
It just makes me frustrated that, like, it is such a problem for people.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what made it hard was that Caitlyn is a terror.
She's awful.
She's horrible.
We don't claim her, but we do respect her gender.
Right. That's not because she's trans. It's because she's a conservative freak.
Freak. She's not a trans freak. She's
no.
a conservative freak.
She's not a freak because she's trans. She's a right. freak because she's a Republican.
Yeah. And who would choose that lifestyle?
Yeah.
You and I both have experienced mm-hmm. that the amount of parents who will disclose to us that their kid is trans and continue speaking about them using one pronoun or another, whatever, and then it ends up being in the end
they've been dead naming them or misgendering them the whole time,
the whole conversation. Yeah. Cis people, because there are cis people listening. Hello. Yep. Hi, I love you.
We do love you.
When you are talking about a trans person and they're your loved one, your family member, your friend, whatever, your coworker, I get a lot of that too.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me which way yeah. they transitioned. I don't need to know what they were before
no.
in order to understand who they are now.
No.
You can just tell me who they are now yeah. and I'll fill in the blanks.
Exactly. Like, all that's important, all that's relevant
yes.
is who they are now.
Yes.
And I think that's like something people are like, I don't know what it is. Like, what do I say? Who
are
they?
Who are they now?
Who are they?
Right.
You know? And we sound frustrated because we spent years like yelling to be respected in this way when we first came out. So it's just like when like...
I am frustrated.
Yeah, I am frustrated. And it's... And I think a lot of times people say like, gosh, why are you so frustrated? I'm just trying my best. One thing... Impact over intent always, but also you have to think that like we are not only responding to your behavior,
right?
We're responding all day to the problematic behavior of people just learning. And at a certain point, when trans people have been in the mainstream for years and years and years, if you have not waited to catch up until someone in your life has come out, right. then like you can't make that our problem,
right?
What upsets me is that people who are learning about trans people expect infinite grace from trans people, but then do not reflect that back to them mm-hmm. when we are hurt by their negligence.
Right.
And I think that's what's challenging for people to see, because they have good intentions.
Right.
And they
want to be recognized for their good intentions. Mm-hmm. And I think that has a huge... The fact that they need that recognition in order to continue being kind to us...
Mm-hmm.
It just shows kind of how shady mm-hmm. that their motivation is.
Absolutely.
And that, like, if they were truly doing it from a place of humanity mm-hmm. and humility, they wouldn't require so much praise.
Mm-hmm. I think that what might help cis folks is, like, a reframing of these emotions that come up in the journey of getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Is that, like, this is actually in service of you being a good person or a better person or a more compassionate person, a freer person. Because there are so many lessons that come with embracing a trans loved one that can impact your life in so many ways. Like, opening up your mind to seeing things differently than you thought they were. Realizing that your perception is not always reality. Realizing that when you get something wrong, it's not personal. And that actually accountability is how we find control. If you're looking for control just out of, like, focusing on your intentions while ignoring your impact, you're going to find yourself falling short. And then you're going to feel out of control.
Yeah.
But if you actually are looking at the impact and your intention and realizing that, oh, accountability is how I can stay in control over what I do moving forward. Mm-hmm. And that can inspire you to do the work needed to see your trans loved one as they are and to love them the way that they need. Then that's just something that every human person should learn.
Yeah, it's so beneficial in every aspect of your life.
Absolutely. And trans people have learned all of these things too. Yeah. Like, these are all the lessons that we are also learning throughout transition, showing how to be accountable to ourselves, how to see ourselves in a new way,
yeah.
how to like admit that we were wrong about ourselves, and also even the fact that, like, we might misgender ourselves and our friends. We're having parallel experiences.
Totally.
But the difference is how where the damage lies when mistakes are made or when bills are passed.
Sure. I also think that another parallel is, like, when we meet a trans person that we think has the same experience as us, and then turns out they don't.
Right.
And they're so different than me. Mm-hmm. Like, other trans men that I've met who aren't as playful with language, not being able to call each other girl, in a gay way. I can take accountability and say, oh my gosh, I made an assumption that you're comfortable with that term when you're really not, clearly, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I made an assumption, my bad.
Yeah.
And then we move on. Or if they're hurt by it, then we take some more time. Like, we do it too.
Yeah.
We're all doing it.
It is such
a... But cis people are the ones fucking whining about it.
How hard it is.
Everybody.
When we're doing it too.
We're all doing it.
Like, we are proof that it's possible. We're not an exception to the rule. Like, I didn't come out and, like, be granted the knowledge by Jesus that, like, of transgenderism.
No.
Which also leads us into the topic of today, which is, I believe yes! One of the things I'm proudest of in our relationship is our conflict resolution.
Yeah.
And I do think that has a lot to do with our transness, how we've learned, and our sobriety, and how we've learned to be accountable with ourselves and with each other, and how we've learned to move through these hard conversations with our loved ones. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to ask you, are you mad at me?
I'm furious. Thank you so much for asking.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely furious.
I knew
I'm fuming.
I could feel it in my tit.
Which one?
I guess. The downstairs left one.
Oh. See, I'm wrong, and that's okay.
And that's okay. See, wait, say it again.
I'm wrong, and that's okay.
Oh. Music to my ears.
Isn't that sexy?
That's such a wife thing to say. You're wrong. Yeah, I told you so.
Yeah, tell me again. I want to hear it. I'm going to record it and so I can listen to it while I fall asleep.
Misogyny.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
wait, what was the question?
I asked, are you mad at me?
Oh, right. No, no. I'm not mad at you, honey.
Thanks.
Are you mad at me?
No.
Good. Fucking fine.
When are you the maddest at me?
Oh, God. When am I the maddest at you? That's a really hard question to answer, because I could answer it in a joking way. Like, when am I annoyed with you?
Right.
Or I could literally try to rack my brain at when I've ever been mad at you.
When are you, like, annoyed at me?
Okay. Annoyed. When I'm trying to get sexy and you're like making fart noises and trying to, and like, you can't like settle and like be present with me.
Okay.
That's challenging for me.
I totally get that.
We're like on different planes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm like putting myself out there, trying to be vulnerable and like intimate mm-hmm. and seductive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it feels like it blows my ego a little bit because right. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not sexy enough for this person to see me and not just keep making fart jokes.
Right. That makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's probably when I'm the most annoyed, which is not, it's not that annoying.
Right. Totally.
What about
I understand.
You?
I hear that. I validate it.
Thanks.
And I'm sorry. I'll do better.
Okay. You don't have to.
It's fine. And me, when am I?
Because I want to also say, mm-hmm. I'm not blaming you.
Of course.
For that. Because like.
Well, that's the thing. Is yeah. That's what I was going to say is that like when I'm the most annoyed or mad at you, like I realize that it's a me problem.
Oh, yeah. That's so me.
Because like there's problem. Nothing wrong with, you know, either of us having a different experience. It's just when we're not meeting in the middle and having the same experience that it's easy to want to blame the other for not sharing the same experience.
Right.
So for me, when I get annoyed at you, it's when you don't share the same sense of urgency that I feel. And then what? So it's like if we need to get out the door and you're like,
let me just paint this wall really fast.
Right.
I'm going to patch this hole.
Or like earlier, literally earlier, I wanted to start the podcast and I watched you outside and you were looking for the dog's toys so we could like put them away. And I saw you look at the sun for like 30 seconds so you could
I sneezed.
Sneeze.
I had to sneeze.
But you were looking up and you were just like really taking your time.
Oh no, I was looking at a wasp's nest in the palm tree. I was trying to find it because I heard the buzzing and I was like, okay, but continue.
And then in my experience, I was like, we don't need to find this wasp nest right now. And then I was like frustrated because you weren't like showing a sense of urgency.
I didn't have any.
And you know why? Because there was no need for a sense of urgency. And that's where I land is realizing, well, okay, this is where it ties in with accountability is that I have to be accountable for my emotions. Few times are my emotions a reaction to you actually like directly hurting me.
Sure.
And mostly my emotions are a trauma response to something that you did, like reflecting something in my childhood that hurt me. So it's like, what is it? False. My mom is always like fear, false evidence appearing real.
My mom loves that one too.
Yeah. So it's like I believe that you have no urgency. That's so frustrating. What am I actually feeling? Okay, I feel rushed. Why? Because I'm anxious and I want to get this done. And I want, like, that's my, I'm anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your job to tend to my anxiety.
Right.
And then I think when you're, like, when I'm seeing that you're not urgent with me, then I feel unseen in mm-hmm. my urgency. I feel left behind and I feel abandoned. And I realize it's my abandonment trigger.
Yeah.
And so that's accountability for myself. And mm-hmm. why should I expect you to show urgency if I've never asked that of you? What I could have said was, hey, I really want to get this done. Could we like move a little quicker? And then you would totally do that.
Yeah.
Or you
or
would
I'd
not
be like,
want to.
Why?
Yeah. And then we would talk about it. And then I would realize that we don't need to. And then we would probably find a compromise.
Or we could be like, we could talk about it and then you would realize that there's more of a reason to why you want it to be done sooner.
Absolutely.
And not just trauma, mm-hmm. but also like, oh.
Practical things.
Yeah. Like, I want to get this done because we have dinner plans.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom's going to come home mm-hmm. and that's going to be a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, it would make sense to me if mm-hmm. you were
clear on the why.
Yeah. But usually, urgency does not come supernaturally to me when I know there's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we're on a time crunch and there's pressure, then it kicks in for me. And then I'm like, we got to get this done.
I so understand.
But it's like it has to be down to the wire for me to feel that way.
You know what it also was? It's that like, sometimes I feel I don't know if people, if any listeners relate to this, but sometimes I feel a victim to my moods.
Mm.
And I'm not a victim.
I'm not a victim.
But there is estrogen pumping through my fucking veins.
Same.
And so, and I'm just telling you that I have moods, like strong mood swings. And so if I'm on an upswing and it's time for us to report a COD past, you heard me.
Don't repeat that. Just, we're going to keep that.
Then I feel like, okay, let's go, because like I might get cranky in a second. Isn't that like silly? But
no,
also
it's not
real.
Silly. I remember being unmedicated and feeling that way.
Yeah.
Not trusting that I would be able to stay in a motivated place for the rest of the day. But if I like I rely heavily on my Wellbutrin and my Vyvanse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back on the Vyvanse.
Oh,
tell you
cool.
That.
No.
I can tell you that. I rely on that in order to trust that I'm going to be able to get work done that day.
Yeah.
And if I didn't have that, like when I don't take it, I have a harder time making plans.
Yeah.
And plans to complete a task. I mean, like not just like going out to dinner plans.
Right.
But like getting work done.
Right. Precisely.
It's hard to commit to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I understand.
So, I mean, I can relate.
Yeah.
To that. Thanks for sharing that with me.
Hey, thanks for sharing that with me.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to talk about conflict in this episode, and what a beautiful segue into the topic. What is our most memorable fight? In your opinion, in your mind?
Okay. There's two that come to mind.
Why? Well, I said I said one. Which okay. What's your most memorable? But choose that. Choose which one.
Okay, I'll tell the story. So on the streets in Mexico, there are a lot of trucks on the highway, and they drive really slowly. And you often have to like pass them, and you have to be very careful because there's a lot of like windy roads. And if you pass them and their cars come, you die, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So we were passing. I was driving, and I decided to pass a truck. I decided to be bold because I had thought, okay, if you're going to go, you have to go and be bold. And then, unfortunately, we see a car coming towards us. Ookie spooky. Ah. Life flashing before my eyes. And then I, like, kind of slam on the brakes. And then you said, do you remember what you said?
No.
You said, baby, you have to be more careful. You have to be more careful. And I said, like, what am I supposed to do? And then
be careful.
You said... What am I supposed to do? Like, well, all I can do is brake and go behind the truck. And then I said, do you want to drive? Can you believe it?
And I said, no, I'm just a little baby.
Yeah. And then
I can't drive.
And then we sat in silence for a while. Well, no. What happened is before we sat in silence, I said, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't like talking to you that way. I didn't like that. I'm so sorry. And then silence.
Because then I was staring out the window having a moment of drama, feeling very sad that it felt like a seal had been broken on like the way that we spoke to each other.
Yeah,
changing.
We had never spoken to each other like that.
In 3 years of being together, we had never spoken to each other like that.
And proudly.
Yeah, very proudly.
Because we were like, there's never a reason why that should need to happen.
But then turns out there is a reason why sometimes, that it's just a reaction to like a heightened experience, like a truck coming at you and being scary and scared. And it's like you can't always control the way words come out of you when you're feeling like your life is on the line,
which is hard because you feel out of control,
right?
Because it's like, okay, so I can't always control my gut reactions.
But I think, so, okay, I was staring out the window. It was very, very sad, having all these, like, moments of, like, oh, no, is this the way Elle speaks to me now? Having some trauma from my past relationships where it was very normal for both me and whoever I was dating to raise our voices at each other.
Yeah.
And not speak very kindly to each other. And I was so protective of, we've both been so protective of this relationship and the way we speak to each other.
Yeah.
and so intentional about the respect. And so it was like, I was just having so many like feelings of grief come mm-hmm. over me, being like, oh no, this is the beginning of a new era where this is normal. Mm-hmm. And then instead of ruminating on all of my fears and whatever further, I said, I don't like the way you spoke to me, and mm-hmm. I need that to be heard.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you had already taken accountability mm-hmm. and owned that that wasn't how you want to speak to me, but I just needed mm-hmm. to like reiterate it.
Yeah.
And then I shared that I was feeling scared that mm-hmm. that was the way we were going to mm-hmm. deal with these things from now on.
Yeah.
Because it happened.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I never thought that I had the capacity to like speak so sharply to you. Mm-hmm. And so it's scary to think that in that moment I did. And then I think something that I could say is like, I will absolutely do everything in my power to like never talk to you like that in a moment that I'm in control. And also like I can't promise that it won't happen because I didn't think it ever would.
Right.
And then I think something that has helped us move through these moments of conflict is that like the conversation's not done until there's accountability available on both ends. And there was a reason why I felt at danger and I had a sharpness directed towards you, is because like in that moment I felt like criticized. And I felt like you weren't on my team.
Yeah.
Because it was like a teacher telling me, like, you need to do this. Like, you're putting us in danger.
Right.
And instead of being supportive and being, like, helping me,
right.
it felt like in a moment when I was needing to make a decision to save our lives, you were critiquing me is right. how it felt.
Yeah.
And so then we decided that like when we're driving, we're going to be on each other's teams.
No matter what.
No, even, yeah.
No matter fucking what.
Yes.
You hit a curb. That's okay.
Yeah.
All good.
Hey.
Hey.
No problem.
No problem. Hey, you know what? Like if you're trying to parallel park, I'll mm-hmm. get out of the car and direct you.
Yeah.
Like without question.
Yeah. If you hit a pedestrian.
Hey, we'll bury the body together.
That's what
I got
that's,
the shovel.
Yeah. And since then, I will tell you, there have been moments where we've been like,
yeah.
And it's always like, you got this, baby. You got this.
Yeah.
And I feel like because we took the time to both come to a place where we could both realize what we needed to do, where it's like, I need to be intentional about not redirecting my fear and pointing it at you. Mm-hmm. And then we both need to be on each other's team.
Yeah.
While we're driving. And since then,
it's been pretty smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing.
Also, I think that we came to an understanding that we can't also control our reactions when we're passengers, mm-hmm. when we feel like there's a risk of getting hurt.
Yeah.
Like if you're getting close to a car and I like flinch because mm-hmm. I think, oh, they're not paying attention, they're not going to hit the brakes mm-hmm. when I would hit the brakes.
Yeah.
And not taking it personal when we flinch.
Yeah.
How could I fault somebody mm-hmm. for having a human reaction to a fear that they're going to get hurt?
Absolutely.
In a fucking crazy machine.
Yeah.
That like is very dangerous and everyone knows it.
Yeah. And I think the reason why I started to take it personally when you would comment on my driving is because there was this narrative being spun that I was a yes. bad driver.
Yeah.
When like, I really am not.
No.
Like I'm a great driver.
You're great.
But it became funny to totally. Like joke about the fact that I was a bad driver. It honestly felt like some heteronormative toxic masculinity shit that we were both feeding into.
Yes.
Of like, gosh, my wife here can't operate a motorized vehicle. And unfortunately, it did become personal because it was a part of a dynamic that like
yeah.
that did make me feel insecure.
Absolutely.
And you named that before I did about not liking that was a narrative and feeling like it wasn't even true and it was just like not helpful to anyone.
Right.
So I think that was at play too in that moment where I was like feeling defensive because I didn't realize that an insecurity was forming because I'd always had faith in my driving mm-hmm. until like that started.
Yeah.
And the thing is like we could end the conversation by saying, you made fun of me, that's your problem, but like I fed into it. Mm-hmm. I never set a boundary that said it didn't feel good, even when it didn't. And then I also like probably instigated some of those jokes in order to like feel in control over the insecurity. It was like, I'll say it first.
Right.
And so like, I think that's what's important, is realizing like in almost all cases, other than literal abuse, there's accountability to be held on both sides.
Yeah.
And 100%. I think that's why we've been able to move through these challenging moments, is because we both have learned that, like I said before, that's how we find control over the situation, because that's literally all we can control.
Right.
Is not what the other person will do, but how I will move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes boundaries, and that includes, like, I won't do this thing that hurts you anymore. And, like, if I do again, like, I guess
I'm fucking sorry.
I'm fucking sorry.
What?
What do you
expect? I said sorry.
From me?
That's kind of how I like to deal with things. Yeah. It's my way of, I don't know.
It's the testosterone.
I just think it really like it lets me off mm-hmm. the hook, and that's right. what I want mm-hmm. from these things.
Side note, Hook, great film.
Hook with Robin Williams
and Glenn Close.
I love when Glenn's close.
Do you know she's in that?
Is she Annie?
No, she's one of the pirates. Who's Annie?
The orphan.
Earlier this morning when your mom was making breakfast, she started singing Tomorrow from Annie in Spanish.
Wow.
Well, she said, mañana, mañana. And I said, te quiero, mañana. Oh, it was a really sweet moment.
I saw that.
What about you? What fight comes to your mind when we talk about our fights, when you think about our fights
in the middle of the street.
Oh my God. Once with an ex, like this was dark.
What, you fought in the street?
Yeah. And then the cops made us go into separate subway cars. The cops intervened. They like touched us.
Whoa.
And we were both so drunk that like we were, yeah, bad time.
Drunk you in the past as a twink, like,
literally getting screamed at by.
I get so scared of for you.
Yeah.
When I hear those stories.
Right.
Poor little twink.
Scary. And then I was crying on the subway, like sobbing. I was like, oh my God, what just happened? Like, what kind of relationship am I in? And then this woman sat next to me and she had been crying too. And she said,
New York, only in New York.
And she like held my hand and she was like, honey, what happened? And I told her,
who's the guy?
Yeah. Literally. And I was like, yeah, yada yada yada, my like boyfriend was yelling at me, and then he's like, he literally like trained me to yell back, like he right. like I would never yell back. And then he was like, you don't love me because you're not engaging in these fights. And so I yelled back, and then the cops, yada yada. And she was like, well, I came here from all across the country to meet a guy, and he never showed up. And I was like, oh my God.
So your problems are tiny compared yeah. to mine.
Like, look, I was drunk, but I remembered that.
Aww.
And we just like commiserated, and it was really sweet.
That's sweet.
I slept on the couch that night. Okay, anyway, back to
my favorite fight of ours is probably the God, there's some good ones. But I think the OnlyFans.
Yeah, for sure.
That was
like our first one.
That was our first one, and it was really it was really scary.
And let's also like say what our fights look like.
Oh yeah. Because it was like black eyes and blood.
Yeah. TW.
I'm talking threats.
Yeah, no. What we other than that one time when I was driving and I said, "What am I supposed to do?" We have never raised our voices at each other.
No.
It's always like...
They're really boring.
They're really like lesbian, where we're just like sitting and talking about our feelings. And then like if we're overwhelmed, we'll separate. Context.
Like, yeah. So this was our first fight. And it was, I don't know, a couple years in, maybe. Mm-hmm. A year or two. A mm-hmm. year and a half, maybe, mm-hmm. into our relationship.
No. It was like 6 months.
Seven, eight months. Mm-hmm. 7, 8, 9, 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
About a year.
Yeah, for sure.
Probably I don't three. Know about time anymore.
No,
but
it's fake.
Basically, I was feeling, I was feeling strapped for cash.
Mm-hmm.
I was feeling like I needed an outlet mm-hmm. for these sexy photos that I was taking of myself that I would share with Elle and mm-hmm. and just keep in my phone and do it for myself, basically. And feeling like I could make some money. And I was, like, feeling, like, empowered by the idea of starting an OnlyFans and what that would look like and how it would be like for me
mm-hmm.
and like to like, you know, express my sexuality in a different way.
Yeah.
And we had already closed our relationship mm-hmm. and decided to be monogamous.
Not long before.
No.
Or like a couple months before.
Yeah. And I was really scared to mm-hmm. bring it up because of that.
Yeah.
Because it was so fresh, the mm-hmm. monogamy. And, knowing that, like, since we decided to be monogamous, that our trust and our confidence in our relationship was growing and feeling stronger and stronger mm-hmm. because we started off our relationship very open, very poly, and having to deal with the conversations of insecurity mm-hmm. all the time. And then I think in those few months that we were monogamous, like
there was relief from that. Yeah.
We didn't have to talk about any of it. And then all of a sudden I was like, just kidding.
Yeah. I want to send my nudes to everyone.
Let's.
And to be honest, like I can't even remember what I felt. Like I can't even access the feeling that I felt at that time.
Yeah.
Which like says a lot. Like
it does.
Like there is like zero charge for me of the idea of you doing that again.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Like, I literally can't. I mean, I can, like, think that I just was feeling jealous and feeling like it was a reflection of you being, like, unsatisfied or something in our relationship. Yeah. If you felt the need to have a sexual outlet somewhere else or that. I felt. I really don't. I can't remember.
It was mostly that.
Mostly, yeah.
And then feeling like you didn't want me to be doing something that you didn't know about. So it was very much about you having access to.
Mm-hmm.
Like access to the account mm-hmm. and wanting it to be a thing we were doing together.
Yes. And that helped me so much of thinking like, what if we did this together instead? And we like shared in this experience and then in practice, why is it so hazy for me?
Well, it was a really small time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a blip in time. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. lost interest right away.
But we did it together and had a lot of fun taking photos.
In the beginning. And then towards, like, I think it was, like, maybe the fourth or fifth post,
mm-hmm.
It started being that every time I would bring up, oh, I think I want to, like, post on my OnlyFans,
mm-hmm.
it would turn into a discussion that was really heavy.
Yeah.
I think that my fantasy of this thing was that it would be fun. There would be mm-hmm. no challenging feelings.
Yeah.
That it would be lighthearted and playful and horny and slutty right. and sexy.
For sure.
And then when it wasn't one-sided and mm-hmm. shallow and mm-hmm. it ended up triggering a lot of deep conversations mm-hmm. about autonomy and about
mm-hmm.
like our personal sexuality mm-hmm. and like ways we could engage with nonconformity or mm-hmm. like nonconforming ideas of monogamy. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It just stopped being like the fantasy for me. And it started feeling too like loaded with intellectual thought.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I was like, well, I'm not horny anymore. Yeah. Sorry. And it wasn't, I didn't blame you for it.
Right.
'Cause I was just like, it was on me that I was idealizing this thing
mm-hmm.
of OnlyFans mm-hmm. and not thinking about it in a holistic sense.
Yeah.
You know, so it really wasn't your fault for having thoughts and feelings. It was
right.
that I was minimizing this thing into a like a really tiny little mm-hmm. box that it could never live in.
I hear that. And like I was holding all of those things at the same time where like I could experience that it was hot and sexy and it's like fun to see people like fawn over you. And like at the same time, like I think also like we had just moved in together. We had just closed the relationship, and I think like it felt like introducing like other people having access to you in this intimate way felt like risking it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I had already risked so much and like throwing like what could either be a wrench or another gear into the gears, like it felt scary for me.
Yeah.
And it was triggering my like fear of abandonment and right. my abandonment trauma and yada yada. And so we came to like boundaries mm-hmm. together. And I think when you got clearer to me about like what you wanted to do, and like how you wanted to engage with people, it was very different because mm-hmm. like we had talked so much without actually talking about what it would look like.
Right. I remember that. Because, like, yeah. you know, you think OnlyFans mm-hmm. and you think of one thing, which yeah. is that you're showing everything mm-hmm. and you're flirting with everyone who comments and you're just, like, putting it all out there mm-hmm. for everyone to look at.
Yeah.
And the way that I was excited about doing it was that it would be more of, like, a teasing OnlyFans, an outlet mm-hmm. for those photos.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't doing it on my story anymore and, mm-hmm. like, posting them on Main like yeah. I used to.
And it's all the same things that where you grapple with polyamory. It's like mm-hmm. I was like grappling with my like enoughness sure. sense of enoughness of being like am I not like fulfilling you because right. like you were saying like that it you needed more fulfillment you yeah. were looking for more fulfillment and I took that personally
right
instead of thinking like I'm looking for something that you can't give me it was like I'm looking for something you're not giving me
right.
is what my body thought
yeah
and but then like yeah, like I remember it getting a lot easier though when like and I would have fun. And yeah. like when I think of it now, like I think at that point I hadn't had enough proof that you're gonna stick around.
Yeah.
You know? And I just
it was
like
so fresh.
I know. I have more of a relationship with my abandonment trigger now
mm-hmm.
where I don't identify with it and I don't like believe everything that comes from it.
Yeah.
And I can sense when that it's coming up from there.
Yeah.
I just remember at that time thinking like if this thing that you're doing is like bringing up all these feelings in me, like why would you still want to do it?
I remember that.
And I like, oh. and that's not fair.
No, but it's so real.
Yeah.
I totally remember that and feeling mm-hmm. like the thing about this fight that I really loved
mm-hmm.
was that like it was pulling at the most insecure parts of us.
Absolutely.
The ones that I grew up having, like the insecurities that I developed as a teenager mm-hmm. was that I was this adulterer, cheater, player.
Mm.
I hurt a lot of people in high school when I came out as a lesbian and started dating around and tried to basically just hook up with whatever would come my way despite all of my commitments I had made to other people. It was all justified in my mind by the idea of just being able to experience as much as possible.
Right.
And so I would justify cheating on people all the time. And I felt broken mm-hmm. by the time I was an adult. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I am so bad. And I've hurt so many people. I have this wake. I've just left this wake of crying people in my past who think I'm a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get together mm-hmm. and you have the story that you have been with monsters.
For sure.
And I have the story that I am one. And then this was the first fight. Mm. And of course it was the first fight.
Yeah.
Because it was our deepest insecurities coming together mm-hmm. and poking each other in the places that hurt the most.
Yeah.
And I felt so flawed for even wanting to start mm-hmm. an OnlyFans and being like, why can't I just feel good with what I'm doing right now?
Yeah.
This is fucking awesome. Like we were still having sex like every day mm-hmm. at that point. Mm-hmm. Like what more could I want? And yet I did want
right.
more.
And I was feeling at the time like, why can't I just be cool with this? Like right. why can't this just be easy?
Yeah.
Because in my mind I could see how it would be easy.
Right.
But like then my body is screaming at me that there's some threat to right. my life and my love. And that's the thing, is that, like, I think I learned from that conversation that, like, it's okay to set boundaries based on the feelings that you're having, even if they're not the feelings you want to land on.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, you know?
Totally.
Where it's like, I knew that that trauma response was not my idealized version of myself, but at the same time, I needed to learn how to feel safe. And ultimately, that is how we heal those wounds, mm-hmm. is by having the trigger come up and then learning that you're safe through it.
Right.
And so while, like, I don't know if I'm sure I did not move through that fight perfectly. Yeah, but all I know is that, like, I think the reason why I can sit here today and say that it holds no charge is because, like, I was triggered and realized that I was still safe.
Yeah.
And that just happens, like, over and over in this relationship.
Over and over. And and this topic of, like, sexuality and jealousy and whatever, mm-hmm. I think has been so present throughout mm-hmm. our entire relationship. And so much of my shit that I brought into this relationship, all the baggage from, like, around that stuff, is evolving and changing, mm-hmm. Because of these conversations we have. Our fights are conversations.
Yeah.
They're conversations that hurt really bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Not because we're attacking each other or trying to hurt each other.
But because we're having conflicting experiences.
Yeah. And because it's really hard to feel these things.
Mm-hmm.
It just Absolutely. Sucks to feel them. And I think, like, that was the beginning of processing through some of my trauma with, like, seeing my sexuality as my, like, biggest asset mm. In the way that I show up in relationships,
mm-hmm.
and like really minimizing my value down to my sexuality and what I could offer in that way. And I think what was being triggered, and, you know, I didn't really know this in the moment, but I think when I was craving an OnlyFans mm-hmm. outlet, it was because you weren't only viewing me as a sexual object,
mm.
and I wasn't used to feeling valued in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was part of me that needed to feel more valued in a sexual way.
Interesting.
Even though you did value mm-hmm. me in that way, it wasn't like you weren't objectifying me mm-hmm. in the way that I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I was having some withdrawals.
Heard.
And I think that was a big reason why I was craving it.
Yeah.
Looking back, like, I wasn't planning on saying that.
Yeah.
It just came to me right now.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also, like, there's no shame or issue with you needing, like, validation that you're a sexual object outside of me. Like, the idea of you posting a sexy photo on your Instagram stories and then, like, looking at the DMs, I'm like, of course, I do the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. If I take up, I don't take those very much, but the times I have, I look because I want that validation. Yeah. Sometimes it feels nice.
Totally.
And there's no shame there. And I think, like, yeah, that's, it's like, it did not feel that way then. It felt like, why would you need that?
Right. Yeah.
Why would you even need that? Because I'm everything. I'm perfect. Like,
yeah.
I'm everything to you. Why would you run away? Why right. would you need anything from anyone else ever?
Yeah.
And
but you weren't saying that. You were
no,
feeling it.
And
you were really aware of it.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
One of the things that gave me confidence about our relationship was that you were processing through these things that were so typical jealousy
yeah.
stuff.
Classic.
But you were so aware of where it lived in you, and you didn't make it my responsibility to never trigger.
Right, exactly.
Because I think in the past, in a different relationship or whatever, like, it could easily be that, like, why do you do stuff mm-hmm. that makes me feel this way?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you choose to trigger me in this way when you know this is my insecurity?
Right.
And it's like, I don't think you ever put that on me. And also, but that was a big fear of mine too,
mm-hmm.
back then, was being like, you don't actually like me. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you want to be with me if you know who I am? Mm-hmm. You know that I'm a slut. I was identifying like that at
For
the time.
Sure.
I was like, you know that I'm like super hypersexual on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and like that's one of the things I felt like you liked about me in the beginning. And then all of a sudden it started to feel like that was shifting as we became more monogamous and had more of these kinds of conversations. And I remember bringing that up and being like, why do you want me then? That was a big thing in that fight.
Too. And the thing is, it was absolutely valid that because that was happening and it was unfair. And it's because the closer we got and the more intertwined we got, the more I had to lose and the weight felt heavier on that trauma thing. So at the beginning, it was like a light, like, okay, this is going to help me heal this, but it wasn't tugging enough to actually heal it.
Yeah.
And so it took me time to be able to trust that one, you are an incredibly honest person and a transparent person. And the fact that you literally cannot keep anything from me for any second is a reason why I could maintain that trust.
Yeah.
And can maintain that now after more and more proof that that's true. And at the time it was still early. So I didn't know.
Right.
And
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Like I really understood why you were insecure still, even though we had such a beautiful relationship for those 8 months or whatever, up till whatever, this fight. And I remember giving you a lot of validation in that conversation too, by being like, yeah, it makes sense that you don't trust me quite yet, especially when this is so fresh.
Yeah. I'm realizing, like, looking back on, like, digging up of how I felt at that time or things that I was saying to process this at the time, was like, what was unfair is that I was kind of using heteronormativity as a crutch to justify my insecurities and my trauma. Cause it's like it shouldn't be crazy that I don't like the fact that you're like wanting to start an OnlyFans. Like that's so heteronormative, like relationship culture, of like sure, within those strict parameters, But like, we're queer people who make up the rules. Right. Like
I remember saying that. In response,
and that was hard for me to hear.
Yeah.
Because I remember you saying like, I just feel like we're like falling into this like heteronormative relationship, and I was like,
no, we're not.
And the thing is, I was relying on those things to justify my insecurity and my trauma. And you know what's interesting is that I'm thinking that like that conversation and that situation didn't fully resolve at the end of
didn't.
But it started the conversation. It started a prerequisite of how we engage in these hard conversations.
Totally did.
And it's taken, I don't even know how long, it's been such a gradual a healing process of us healing those individual things that caused the conflict in the first place, that I think, like, I can say now it's resolved.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
I believe that.
We haven't really revisited it much because it hasn't
interesting.
Really come up. I mean, it's come up in different ways, triggered by different things other than the OnlyFans, which really did just fizzle out.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a time when, like, somebody, I posted some sort of thirst trap and, like, a trans girl commented heart eyes or something.
Right.
Or you noticed that I only liked the trans girls.
Oh, yeah.
comments. And it was that.
Wow. I don't think that was much long after, though.
No, it wasn't. It was the same kind of era. But it was that those girls were the first people that liked the post and commented, and so I was staring at my phone when that happened, and I liked all of them at once, and then more people commented, and it all got shuffled.
What a silly thing.
And you got
to be
upset.
Insecure about,
but
like I just like was such a little sensitive baby, so afraid that you were gonna leave me for someone else. And like whenever like jealousy or anything has come up, which doesn't come up very often anymore, but like there are moments, it's like, I realize now that that's like my accountability to, and like, I share it with you because I don't want to like hide an experience that I'm having or else it'll fester. But like, I'm just like, I noticed this and it's like making me anxious and like, I trust you. Honestly, that's what it comes down to. Like, at that time, I just didn't, there wasn't enough trust.
Yeah.
And that, I have accountability for that. Like, there, you had not shown me any reason that I couldn't trust you.
But I told you stories.
But you sure you told me stories.
I told you plenty of stories.
Yeah.
And you were using that as context.
I was.
And that's fair.
Yeah, for sure.
I was being very honest with you about it because I didn't want, because I was afraid of not taking accountability for my past and pretending, trying to sweep it under the rug and pretend that I was never that way.
Right.
And I felt like if I really wanted to move forward, like I couldn't leave any of those doors fully closed without showing you what was in the rooms and being like,
yeah,
look at this. And, you know, and showing you that, like, I think that there's something really powerful about being able to own the things you are not very proud of in your past and being able to freely speak about them.
Yeah.
Like rids you of the shame of it. And I think the shame is what often perpetuates that behavior.
Absolutely.
And is like creates this narrative that, oh, this is who I am. I think part of what created the narrative that I was a cheater in high school is because I was unfaithful to one of my girlfriends. Not even, no, it was that I broke up with her and then I had feelings for her friend, her best friend. And then it became this narrative that I was like a player because then I got with her and then I did the same thing again. And then I went to boarding school and I did the same thing again. And, and then it just kept happening where I would start falling for people's friends after breaking up with them and then it was during relationships and then it was but it just was such a snowball of like identifying as the thing, feeling shame about it and then having that sort of just decide who I was and decide my behavior and I was so sick of it and turns out like not running away from it and facing it and being like, oh yeah,
yeah,
that's what I did.
Yeah.
And holy shit.
Yeah. It's like sometimes like identifying with patterns, like that's just who I am. It's like, girl,
it's like yawn.
Your behavior is not who you are.
No.
Like, come on. Okay. Anyway, to sort of summarize like what, like our experience with conflict, like over the years with us, with me, like what have you learned about like what is successful, what makes us move through conflict successfully and what doesn't?
I think that our biggest flex about the way that we navigate these things is our humility on both of our ends.
Yeah.
And being able to be honest when we can't access the space to hold for each other in certain moments, not holding ourselves to impossible standards of saintly behavior and being like, I hear you and I'm having a hard time holding myself while holding space for what you just shared with me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have to prioritize holding myself. And I need space right now so that I can have an overflow to give you that does the least harm. It's just being like, okay, I can't do this. Bye.
Yeah.
And I think we're really good at that.
Yeah. When we see our conflict as something that we both have to look at together.
Yeah.
And they say it's like you're a team, you know, but truly like being a team. I believe almost all conflict requires two people to solve it, to resolve it. So it's like,
if the conflict is between three people,
then you're going to have to
kill one.
Yeah.
Move through it.
Kill one and move through the other.
Yeah.
And so it's like any conflict requires two people to move through. No, but it's like, I believe that like our strength in moving through conflict is accountability. Accountability with ourselves about the feelings that are coming up, that there are responsibility and accountability for our behavior.
Yeah.
And then we knowing that the conversation's not done until we've both found a way that we can hold ourselves accountable and what we can do differently in the future. Totally. Like that's how we both feel control over the situation.
You know what also I think?
Oh, tell me.
I think that people write books about this stuff.
Yeah.
And people philosophize mm-hmm. on nonviolent communication, mm-hmm. solving issues, solving conflicts with partners, loved ones, whatever. And they create formulas and ideas like I statements mm-hmm. and validating each other mm-hmm. and things like that. I think that you don't need to think that hard when there's a foundation of compassion, mm-hmm. love, and respect mm-hmm. for one another. That allows me to trust that I'm not going to fling insults at mm-hmm. you
right.
willy-nilly because I'm triggered or mad. Mm-hmm. I just know that I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not trying to mm-hmm. not. It's just yeah. not going to happen.
And it's because of your accountability with yourself.
Yes.
Of knowing that the things that are coming up in you, the difference, because we're so in tune with our bodies and our trauma.
I'm gripping this so hard.
Yeah. Like, because of sobriety and our transness, I truly yeah. believe that we are so in tune with our bodies mm-hmm. that, like, we know when we are being triggered or when we are literally being abused. And whenever I have difficult feelings caused by something that you've done, it's literally never, it's never that abuse feeling.
It's never the abuse feeling. That's good. I'm glad.
Thanks
I'm
for
so glad
you don't abuse me.
I love that.
But you do trigger the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
And that's the point of relationships, in my opinion. They to be triggered in a safe space so then you can heal.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like, it's like inevitable. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're like dealing with everything that comes with being alive.
Yeah.
And then you're doing it next to someone else.
Right. Right. Of course. Someone's looking at you
constantly.
All day.
All day. And then, you're like, oh my God, but I'm changing all the time and having thoughts and yeah. feelings and moving through so many shitty things.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay. This new person is the heart of my family now. Let's see all the ways that I can avoid all the ways that my first family fucked me up.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
And I think that having this foundation of mutual respect and not wanting to hurt each other.
Love
and
that.
Being so deeply afraid
yes.
to hurt each other.
That's like truly my worst fear.
And it's like, what a beautiful fear.
Yeah.
I love fostering a fear of hurting you. Like, I'd rather, you know, foster that kind of fear and be afraid to hurt you because I don't want to see you hurting.
Right. And if I see you hurting, like, I want to take care of you.
Yeah.
Like, what can I do?
Yeah. I love you so much.
We're so cool.
What are you in love with about me specifically?
I love that
specific.
Your self-accountability has taught me so much about how much control and freedom there is in being honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. It's changed my life. What about me? Huh?
I'm in love with, oh gosh, there's so much. I'm in love with the real safe space that you've provided in my life to show up as I am without feeling the need to pretend to be better than I am. And you've shown me like so much grace and so much comfort and kindness that I've ended up becoming the man that I've always dreamt of becoming because I think that you saw me before I could really see myself.
Well, isn't that
nice? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I really love that about you.
Thanks.
I love you. Cheers. I love you.
I love you.
Clink.
Follow us on Patreon.
Follow us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. That's what they say.
Oh, subscribe. Gosh. I'm not you with know, all these new terms.
If you're interested in watching the full video episodes of our podcast, you can follow us on Patreon. You can also support us on Patreon if you care about us.
Don't Patreonize me.
You could Patreonize me. That would be nice. I like it.
I love you.
Bye. Bye. Trends in love, taken out.